Good morning. Today is Tuesday.
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday, May the 24th, 156th day of the new year. Joining us this morning, the old guy at Redek, Greg Foster. Yeah, yeah.
I remember when I was the young guy at
Redek.
Yeah, in 1999.
Oh. 1999.
Yeah.
Geez, I only had 17 years under my belt then.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for bringing that one up, buddy.
Well, it wasn't my first job.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Okay, our quote this morning. We've got this one. Where'd it go? From Don Juan. In the days of old, men made the manners. Manners now make the men.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes. How's that for frightening, huh?
There you go.
Get scuttled by a nice, polite guy.
Don Juan. Yeah. Don Giovanni. There's a great, it's a Mozart opera too. Don Giovanni. It's a good one. He gets thrown into the pit of hell at the end.
Oh, down to the bottom?
Yeah, by the commandant. The statue of the commandant comes to life.
I just finished reading Dante's Inferno.
Ooh.
It's the only one of the three that I like. that's hey, Purgatory. I'm not going to read a book about Purgatory.
Right. It just goes on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, yeah. I stumbled on Cliff Notes or Spark Notes.
Oh,
and
okay.
Made it really nice to be able to read.
Oh, there you go.
References to old popes and things like that that were going on in the 1400s.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, hopefully we don't need one of those to explain what's going on around here in 150 years, huh?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, maybe a short explanation of what's going on right now might be helpful. But
Yeah. Do you have challenges sometimes with folks that buy into the revisionism of the area? Oh,
like
the pristine Humboldt Bay.
Right.
Yeah, there's not a spot on the shore that's not been cut, worked, developed, ranched, had oil spilled on it, et cetera, et cetera. What it looks like today isn't necessarily what it's been like its entire life.
Oh, right. Well, you know, and it's funny because I think, I you know, one of my things I love is history. And we have so much of that here and the effect on the land. I was reading the other day, actually, and this is not Humboldt Bay, San Francisco Bay, but my grandfather's grandfather sailed into San Francisco Bay in 1836.
So your great-great-grandpa?
Yeah, I guess that would be my grandfather's grandfather, great-great-grandpa. Yeah. Yeah, and he was very early into California. He was, and he settled in the Bay Area. His diaries, et cetera, are all down at the State Library. And
So you don't have access to them?
No, there's diaries. They have diaries talking about, you know, the abundant wildlife coming down on the Yerba Buena is what they called it. And he ended up doing the first and laying out the town of Sausalito because he worked for Richardson, who's got Richardson's Bay.
Okay, so he's on North Bay then, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, since 1836, we've gone from San Francisco to Humboldt County. That's about as far as the family has spread.
Well, I mean, you know, you think of the cultural differences. That's a pretty good jump there, buddy.
We're mostly all Sonoma County. We took that giant leap in the 60s to Humboldt County.
Oh, but you didn't buy any of the land for the grape growing?
Well, it's interesting. My great-grandfather on the other side of the family had and his brother had apple ranches on the edge of Sebastopol, but they sold that in the early 70s before it was worth anything.
Yeah. You know, I've always heard your timing's a little soft.
Yeah, exactly. So the family still has a 70-acre ranch out in Guerneville, but it's interesting. You know, there's so much, so much change. I have this poster in my office that shows downtown Eureka in 55 and now, and it's just amazing the effect that we've had on our environment.
KINS, news and information time, but time marches on. It's 8:19.
It does.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us, Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, news and information time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, you had a couple of interesting things, you know, with the history and some of the challenges and whatnot in our area. It seems that we keep striving for a better future. Makes sense. But we still kind of keep being anchored to the past. You know, there was what you and Chris Crawford, what, 15 years, 18
yeah,
it's years,
quite a while ago.
Ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Beating the drum for fiber optics. Got to get it here. Got to get it here.
Right.
Okay. Now the redundancy. Okay. And now it's redundancy in different ways. Okay. And now it's not treating people as second class citizens. Okay. And we have a tree fall down and we're still SOL.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then somebody cuts it. And you go, you know, we're not quite as invincible here as we think we are.
No. And in fact, you know, when we started this process, when we got the one fiber optic line, you know, I grew up in Southern Humboldt, so I know.
You can say it. Yeah, everybody's in the Miranda, confessional.
Grew up in Miranda, okay. Right. So I knew what the loss of utilities was all about growing up, and that, you know.
Normal.
Right.
Yeah.
And the electrical grid is built largely to be redundant. That's why they call it a grid, and you know. So we started advocating for that second line, and the idea was, you know, we would be better off than we were, but it took that private sector investment in putting their services on that second line to avoid the outages. And so we didn't promise, we said we're building a second line, an alternate line, that if your carrier was going to invest in using and ensuring that they were on all the time, then you'd benefit. And so right after that line was put in, there was a lot of publicity and a lot of talk, and I wrote a couple of articles, and, you know, RTC was all about ask your carrier. So, you know, I'll put a plug in for Suddenlink, if for no other reason than I haven't had an outage at work.
They did it
forever. Right, right, yeah. Exactly. And so, and
yeah,
I
have we haven't out here either.
Suddenlink phone and Suddenlink internet. And so we never know when it goes out until someone comes in and says, hey, is there something going on, you know, with your problem? And so, you know, there was another issue recently and with the major carrier. And so, you know, we need to keep saying invest. And I know that Senator McGuire and Assemblymember Wood have also been doing some legislative work on getting reporting better and better services for 911 as a public safety front. And it's one of those things where we just need to keep pushing and not accept second class infrastructure, even though we might be remote.
Well, it was interesting. That was one of the discussions I had at the radio gathering I was at in Little Rock, was, you know, with all of the social media and everybody having the phones, how quick, boom, and things are tied up.
Yep. Yep.
And then if you have a tower go down, okay, and sometimes the old traditional, maybe not quite so sexy.
Right.
Because we're getting a little bit older, but we're still out there.
Right.
And a lot of times we get ignored.
Right.
As being, you know, in the emergency situations, boom. You know, because you think about it, if you have phones, some folks are going to lose their phones.
Right.
Some aren't going to have access to be able to reinvigorate them.
Sure.
Or charge them up.
Sure.
Or.
Exactly.
And if that's all you're relying on, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah, exactly. No, I, you know, I'm a big believer in broadcast radio, especially local broadcast radio, where, you know, you got to have the whole notion of when they call it resiliency now, you know, the resilient community in terms of how do you deal with natural disasters and economic dislocation. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
How about survivalist?
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
Much more macho, doesn't
there
it?
There he does. Yeah, exactly. Because I don't want to, like, buckets of dry powder or rice or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole notion that, you know, you have multiple roads, you have multiple, you know, airports, you have multiple ways of communicating, you have, you know, you need to have all this, because you know, without that sort of redundancy, no matter what the infrastructure is, you leave yourself really at risk.
And, yeah, something's going to go out somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we are in just on a normal year, we're in an area that's fraught with peril. But then you have.
Are you from the chamber?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, our weather's interesting. I love it, you know, but it's, you know, creates some problems as it
things
did this
happen.
Year. Exactly.
Things move, things
exactly.
slide, things, yeah, I mean, it just is. So I would think that we would be a little bit better off, but yet when we have one of these little incidents that really brings it back home that maybe we're not.
Well, in some ways we're not. I mean, if you're on the, you know, on the end of the line and your carrier is saying you only get to have one string and that string breaks, you're in trouble. Now, if your carrier says, well, we got two strings, you know, the chances of both going out are less, not impossible, obviously. But
so why wouldn't some of these PUC governed entities be either forced to or want to on their own have everything up so that they don't have potential loss of customer or cut of service?
Well, and so that's an issue that's been discussed. The telecommunications companies have to ensure a certain reliability to the fourth percentile, 99.99 or whatever, there you go, for telephone service. And I have, you know, I admittedly been out of the policy realm for a while on this one, but at the time we were really working on it. The whole internet telecommunications was unregulated. It wasn't considered a part of the sort of necessary infrastructure that's required. And the PUC and the whole regulated utility notion was, we're going to have a single utility in each area provide this, and they're going to be regulated as opposed to having 18 power companies. You know, back in the day when you used to have a million different wires because everybody was trying to get into the business.
Yeah, now we just have them underground and cut them.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah, exactly.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC, talk shop presented by REDEC and CDH Painting. Greg, as you look at some of the different infrastructure challenges that we still have, it's easy for some of us who've been around a little bit to go, oh, well, I got that. Anyway, and not realize our vulnerability still.
Right, right.
How do you keep that edge while there's been enough development and advancement, and it's not a daily occurrence, and it's not a weekly occurrence or monthly occurrence, right, but it's an occurrence?
Right, right. Well, infrastructure isn't necessarily sexy, you know, and it's hard to get people really to think about, you know, almost the unimaginable. I mean, the 9-point earthquake to me is almost unimaginable, right? You know,
no references.
No, there's just no reference point for us. And you know, we can look at Fukushima or we can look at Chile when they had their 8.8, and we get kind of a sense there of what happens.
Yeah, but you know, we think mud huts versus
right
California earthquake standards.
Exactly, exactly.
Right. Well, they've got bushes and we've got redwoods.
Right.
You know, when they come down, things are a little different.
Exactly, exactly. And our buildings, you know, it may be that our buildings for the most part do okay, but that all of our highways don't.
Yeah, the roads disappear.
Right, right.
Big deal.
You know, and my parents were here in 64 and lost their house down in Miranda, and they talk about how, you know, there just was no way to get in and out. And so, I'll tell the story, and I think it's true, but if it's not, you know.
Still a good story.
I'll give the caveat. This may be absolutely false, but there was a huge airlift as a result. Everything had to come in and out, and I was told that, I haven't verified this, it was the largest civilian airlift in the history at that point, where domestically, where, you know, everything had to come in and out by aircraft. My parents ended up getting out sometime later when they, you know, went over Bell Springs Road and they had an army convoy take them out. But, you know, it's hard for us to comprehend what that's going to be like. And you know, communication back then, you know, was rudimentary compared to what it is now. But I don't know if it was more resilient or not. So I don't know that in 64 we had satellite phones. We have those now. But I don't know that any...
Probably didn't. Military probably didn't.
Right, exactly.
Bring in some of these things. I mean, you talk to some of the guys like Winsler and some of the old-timers that are still around. Yeah, I mean, that was impressive as all get out.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to do that. One thing, I think Rex was on a couple weeks ago, had pointed out at that time there were distribution warehouses in Eureka.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're not.
No.
So the ability to withstand a little bit longer independently was there, and now everything's brought up each week.
Right. Well, and that's a big deal. Yeah. I was talking to my wife and someone from my wife being Emily Jacobs or at the airport, and someone from the Economic Development Administration about whether or not it would be a worthwhile project for EDA to help fund is put a cargo facility that's a real cargo facility and also be able to be used as a something like that in case of an emergency, at the airport and have
there's
a
space.
Yeah, well, there's
it
plenty of space.
Seems to make sense.
She's working on a project now to do solar out there and some of that space they can't do anything else with. And,
keep the weeds down.
Yeah. Well, they have to mow. The thing is, they really do have to mow around the airport, at least the runway. That was kind of an interesting project. It'd be one of those things that solves, multiple. You could have cargo people in there. You could have emergency management and emergency supplies.
Just being goofy. Now, we talk about having a shipping container warehouse district.
Mm.
Okay. And we always have been trying to battle to get positioned as a regional distribution center for the blank company, whoever it is. Why not have something at the airport? I mean, if they could get the airplanes to fly some of the cargo in as a backhaul.
Right.
And it'd save a truck having to come up here? Why not?
Well, and there's been some discussion about whether or not if we had a real good cargo facility up there, we could bring in bigger cargo planes. Right now we're flying little ones and do more of that kind of flying.
In and out.
Right. And, I don't know if that's a feasibility or not. But the nice thing about airports is that, airport-compatible uses can include things that are aviation related or not. Basically the rule is, don't shine bright lights too bright, I guess. And
don't make
and
too
don't
much
be
noise.
Don't be too tall. You can be.
Fine.
Do not, do not get in the way of the glide slopes and all that, that airport has a lot, and all six airports have, well, Neyland not so much, but, all six airports. And
there's lots of space that could be utilized.
Right. Now, the issue we have over at Murray is it's very low.
Yeah, when you're down in the swamp in the tidal zone, it's kind of tough to do a whole lot.
Exactly. So, is that a place where you want to do a lot of cargo or a lot of emergency services when one of your threats could be a tsunami? Maybe not.
An earthquake, things could kind of go...
Well, it could liquefy. Which is interesting. Like Fukushima, the problem they had there was the diesel generators were all low, so they flooded and wouldn't run to keep the thing, powered correctly. Right, exactly. I think.
What if you could throw a grade out at the infrastructure in our area for attracting businesses and retaining businesses? Everything all wrapped together.
Right.
What would you give it? Coming from a teacher, what would you grade it out at?
Maybe a low C.
So average?
Yeah, well, maybe lower than that. You do see where, and it varies, right, by place. You do see areas where you have and areas that we might even be competing with for smaller types of companies. That have ready-to-go space that's, you don't have to. It's kind of like what they did at Aldergrove. I mean, they did a good job out there. That you didn't have to buy 75 acres. You could buy a small parcel. The city would help you with that, and it had all the utilities and roads and everything already put in. And so that worked well. We don't really have anything more like that of that size.
McKinleyville, is that business park a little too small? Or different use.
You're talking about by the airport?
Yeah.
Well, and that's an office park, so people are moving out there, and I don't think they can have like a manufacturer like we have.
Just
I
a different use.
Right. But, you know, flexible zoning for general manufacturing and, programs in place. I always say it's the three, programs, policies, and physical infrastructure are really what you need to grow a business or to get someone that wants to bring
or
their
to
business
attract.
Here. Yeah. And so if we look at all those, the places that do really well have a really strong alignment of all three.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We'll be back just briefly with Greg Foster.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:49. Greg, just in the last couple seconds we have here, if folks are interested in trying to find out more about what can be done here and kind of get behind something,
mm-hmm.
where do they go? Is there an in-county lobbying group for the county?
Not really. I mean, there's a group of us that are starting to work together again that represent each of the cities in the county. And I think the chambers could be much more active and involved in policy representing the interests locally. I know they do at the state level, but I don't know how much they get involved at the local level.
Yeah. But it's a good first step to see.
Right. And so the group that I work with is primarily those people who are practitioners, not policy people. We just want projects done.
The people with the dirt under the nails.
Yeah, that's
thanks for coming by, bud.
Yeah, okay. Let me take a look here.
Yeah. Quick. See you tomorrow morning.
All right, thanks.